As more Americans call for police reform, some experts say the next step in the conversation is taking a closer look at policing technology. Amazon recently announced a one-year moratorium on police agencies using its facial recognition software. Ruha Benjamin is a professor of African American Studies at Princeton University and author of Race After Technology. She joins us now on this and what she calls the new Jim Code. Welcome.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. So you've shared many memories of your time growing up in Los Angeles, seeing boys lined up for police pat downs or the sound of helicopters overhead. And now you say that those same modes of surveillance and policing actually continue, but they're less visible to the eye, something you call the new Jim Code. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Absolutely. And so, you know, right now we're in a moment where more and more people are becoming aware and rallying around the need to defund the police. But there are many ways in which policing happens in our lives without the flesh and blood presence of actual police. And many of these are surveillance technologies that look at people and you don't even know that you're being watched or tracked. And so facial recognition software is one of these that's used both in the public and private sector. And in the last week, many of the companies that produce this technology have actually said that they would stop offering it to the police because they understand that it aids and abets the unwarranted tracking and surveillance of people. And so I'm hoping that for those who are aware of the profiling that actual police do, they can start to become aware of the way that the technology also profiles communities.
You mentioned these companies. Amazon is one of them. They announced they would no longer let police use their facial recognition technology for a year. But Amazon's public decision makes clear that this software is being created and owned by private entities. What's the role of regulation, do you feel, in these tools, which are now privatized?
It's really not enough for companies to offer this kind of short-term moratoria on the use of facial recognition for police only, because there are many, many institutions, organizations in both the public and private sector that employ it. For example, at UCLA, it was one of the first schools to announce its intention to use automated software to decide who could come on campus and not. And the only reason why it's not using it is because an independent entity, a digital rights nonprofit, actually audited the software that it was going to use and found that there were 58 false positives. That means students, faculty, and staff that were matched with a criminal record and were predominantly people of color. And these were false matches. And so imagine being a student or faculty and having this system flag you as not supposed to be on campus, as someone who is an intruder, and then what that kicks in terms of campus police or LAPD. And so UCLA is just one of many places that has considered or is already using some kind of automated facial recognition program that makes all kinds of technical mistakes, but those technical mistakes often target the very people who are most vulnerable to police violence.
I mean, this really gets at bias within these algorithms, which evaluate risk or identify these crime hotspots, or even we've talked about on this show, California's gang database. But they're designed to supposedly take out the bias in policing, but you argue that's impossible.
Exactly. So these technologies are produced in a context that is awash with discrimination and bias. That means we have to train these technologies, these programs, to make decisions. And so part of that training is deciding how to teach it to look for a threat, for example, or how to predict that someone is going to do something wrong. And all those predictions and that training is based on historic decisions that organizations, police, teachers, doctors have made in the past. So if those people have been making discriminatory patterns and decisions, that's feeding the algorithm. The algorithm, the smarter it gets, many times, the more biased it's becoming. That means it's mirroring human decisions and actions. And so The real danger is that people stop questioning it just because it's a technology. We think it's more neutral than, let's say, a racist judge or officer or teacher because it's coming to us through a screen. But someone had to teach that screen to make that decision and had to design that program. And that's what we need to keep an eye on.
Perhaps what you just said is the answer to my next question. But in this current moment where most people support reimagining what the police could look like, what might reform look like in this technological policing state or this new Jim Code, as you call it?
I really want us to think about what is at stake with maintaining the police as an institution. What's the origin of policing? We know that it came out of slave patrols. And so it's not an accident that the people who are most harmed by this institution are the descendants of people who were enslaved. And so the root of the institution is rotten. And so rather than thinking about how to sort of tweak the edges of it, I think we have to reimagine and rethink what actually constitutes safety and well-being in our communities. And so we have to be very wary that you might defund the police, the actual people who are walking and patrolling neighborhoods, but policing may continue through technology. And I think part of our goal in this moment is not to let that happen, to be vigilant so that the racist forms of policing that we're up against don't just shapeshift, become more invisible and impenetrable and unaccountable. And so let's go to the root causes and think about what will actually make us safe.
We're talking about it in the context of these tools used by police and private companies, but there are also these apps like Citizen, which is a crowdsource tool that essentially gives folks information about incidents or crimes in a neighborhood. And now there's this contact tracing for COVID-19 that's become more available. How do we make sense of these apps and evaluate whether to use them or not and the risk of that?
And so partly, and I love that you brought up the apps that everyday people use, because it's not just big institutions and organizations using technologies. We're all kind of enrolled in this process of tracking one another. And so if we know that this tracking is patterned according to race, like a lot of people use these kind of next door apps and things where they're looking around their neighborhood, who's an intruder, who's supposed to be here or not. All of those perceptions are shaped by racial bias and class bias. And so who's likely to be reported on the Nextdoor app or, you know, sort of the Citizen app? And so there's no way to sort of take these technologies out of the social context. They are mirrors for us. They are mirrors for society. They're reflecting back at us our biases and our patterns of discrimination. And so to the extent that we can use them as mirrors and then try to deal with the root causes, they're useful. But if we really think that they're somehow neutral, that we should be making consequential decisions based on what's coming to us from these technologies, we're only going to deepen the inequalities that we're living with right now.
So would you recommend using these contact tracing tools for COVID-19?
On the one hand, I'm always wary of something that's just going to be a tech fix for something that's really a harder problem to deal with and where there might be analog solutions like old school public health. But just on a basic level, like even if I was gung-ho about contact tracing itself, the idea you would need, a smartphone for this to work. You would need everyone to have a smartphone. And just the inequalities that we have where many, many people, 40% or more, don't have the basic device that would make this useful. That's a first sort of issue that I see with it. And then the other is that it's like the facial recognition stuff. There's a lot of false positives when it comes to contact tracing technology. I mean, the fact that it will tell you that you were in touch with someone or not in touch with someone who's a threat, and it gets it wrong all the time. So part of my worry is that we sort of rely on the technology to guide us, thinking that it's really effective, and then we don't develop the actual sort of human-to-human techniques we need to grapple with the pandemic, and then the risk increases.
That's Ruha Benjamin, Associate Professor of African American Studies and author of Race After Technology. Ruha, thank you so much for joining us.
It's really my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.